Well, those who forget the lessons of history are condemned to repeat them. With that great truism in mind, we'd like to attempt to make some more sense of this unusually turbulent world we're living in at the moment. Some writers have been acknowledging a certain mood right now, a slightly overwhelmed mood, and it does prompt questioning about whether something is shifting or unusually brittle in our underlying systems. Let's tap now the wisdom of a woman who's delved deeply into previous acute turbulence, the acclaimed and awarded historian Margaret Macmillan, who played such an important role, if you recall, in RN's marvellous special series on World War One. We've talked to her too about some of her books, The War That Ended Peace being one of them. I trust we're not moving anywhere like that again, but we'll seek her insights. Welcome back to Saturday Extra, Margaret.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Look, the New York Times columnist is one we noticed. Roger Cohen quotes the Russian writer Tolstoy, referring to, quotes, epidemic suggestion, describing those moments when humanity seems to be gripped by a kind of mass hypnosis that no force can counter. And he said the resulting movements like the Crusades or the 17th century Dutch tulip craze can't be controlled. Do you think we're in anything like that moment?
No, I don't think so. I think our institutions are fairly strong. I think we have good international institutions. But I think Tolstoy is onto something. We're an irrational species. I mean, we like to think of ourselves as very rational, but we do get gripped by fears. We get gripped by worries. We get gripped by enthusiasms. I mean, you have to look at what happens when hard-headed business people suddenly all start investing in the same things. They're not always acting rationally. And I do think we have a mood at the moment which is at least troubling. I mean, I think there's a disillusionment among Democratic voters that somehow their leaders, their elites, aren't doing the job they're meant to be doing, that they're betraying the ordinary people, they're not looking out for them. There's a contempt for politicians, there's an unease. It's not, I would say, a full-blown hysteria, but I do think it's troubling. That's all I'd say.
And is there a sense, as you described so brilliantly in the lead-up to the 1914 war, that things can go wrong and go wrong very quickly if we avoid our gaze from these rather irrational moments?
Well, I think we can all get smug. You know, we want to live in an uncomplicated world. We want to get on with our lives. And I think we've had, at least in the West, it's not true of other parts of the world for sure, but in the West, we've had a pretty long period of peace where very few of us have been affected directly by conflict or war. And I think we've got used to the idea that peace is the normal state for the world, even though there, of course, have been many wars since 1945. But I think we should be careful because I think things can go badly wrong very quickly. I mean, in the summer of 1914, the Archduke was assassinated at Sarajevo on the 28th of June. 5 weeks later, Europe was in a general war. And a lot of Europeans, probably the majority, weren't expecting it. They didn't think it could happen. They thought Europe had moved way beyond those sorts of wars. So what worries me is that we don't pay enough attention sometimes to difficult international situations. We take for granted our international institutions. We don't do enough to reinforce them. And I think we need to remember just how quickly things can go from what apparently looks like a solid period of peace to something else.
One of the other things I took from your work was that the decision makers became, in a way, exhausted. They actually lost their ability to believe they could influence the course of events, which they didn't actually think were going to be nearly as serious anyway. But there was a sort of a torpor descended on them.
It's sort of fatalism, I think. And I think you're right. I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, but it just seemed to me that there was this feeling, certainly in certain circles in Germany, for example, or Austria-Hungary, but elsewhere too, that throwing up their hands, what can we do? It's going to happen. Maybe it's good if we've had these tensions. Maybe it's good to have a good war and get them over with, and then we can just get on with things.
Yes, a sort of cleansing war. That was that dreadful phrase, I think, that, sense that was around. My God, look what they got instead. Now, out of the two world wars, of course, institutions were put in place to prevent such catastrophes. Do you think we are seeing any significant breaks in those institutions? Anything that could induce this very fatalism that you've described?
Well, I think what's worrying is we have players in the international scene who don't want to abide by the rules. And I'm thinking of Putin, for example, in Russia. The Russian foreign policy recently has been one of gambling, taking risks, invading the Crimea against all international agreements, trying to destabilize Ukraine, causing these frozen conflicts around the borders of Russia. And that, I think, is worrying, because if you have people who don't play by the rules, if you get too many of them, then the rules are weakened. I mean, we all know what happens in a society when people stop obeying laws. It encourages other people to stop obeying laws, and people start looking out for themselves. There are also worrying situations in the world where there are tensions building up, and I think people on both sides or different sides using these tensions, often in a nationalistic way. I mean, I think what's happening in the seas around China is worrying, because you're getting people staking out positions, they're becoming national issues, and it's more difficult to back away, more difficult to come to a compromise. I'm not saying that we're in any way in a situation like we were in 1914 or 1939, but I really think we need to watch it.
Now, you trace this particular period of turbulence back to September 2001, and that's when you say historians in the future will look at this period and say that's when the world shifted. So just explain further why you think that that is quite an important marker buoy.
Well, I think the attack on the United States on September 11th, 2001 really jolted the Americans. It was a terrible shock to the United States. And in the aftermath of that, the American government took certain decisions which have in fact led to greater instability. I mean, I think any government probably would have gone into Afghanistan and got rid of the Taliban, but then by not staying there and trying to build a stable society, I think they've let the door open for all sorts of problems in that troubled region. But the invasion and occupation of Iraq, I think, has destabilized a very important part of the world, has led to absolute misery. And it doesn't look like there's any end in sight. And now, of course, Syria is locked in this conflict, which goes on and on. And it's affecting all its neighbors and beginning to cast a shadow further afield.
Yes. And that is what is, I think, very interesting about this question of trust. And it's, again, that question of whether people's own morale, this is what we're interested in tapping, whether they start to believe that the people who are in control can't manage the course of events. Mark McKinnon from the Toronto Globe and Mail said future historians are likely to judge their leaders on whether they seek to calm or simply take advantage of the choppy waters we're in. So there's quite a lot of imperative, is there not, to play very wise politics at the moment, if I can put it like that?
Well, I think the trouble is, because the world is rather troubled, there's also an imperative to make outrageous claims, to push outrageous claims. I mean, I think this is partly what Donald Trump is doing. And I do think it's across the world, I think there is a sense that those who are meant to be running things for the rest of us haven't been doing a very good job. And it's not just foreign policy. I mean, certainly in the West, the invasion and occupation of Iraq has had a very bad impact, I think, on faith in governing elites. But also the financial crisis of 2008 and the way in which the effects of that crisis are still lingering. Jobs have not come back in the ways that people had promised they would. A lot of people are not really doing very well. And I think there's a feeling that the elites are out of touch. They don't care about the rest of us. And they're just not doing a very good job. Now, that may be right or wrong, but it is, I think, a very widespread feeling.
Yes, I noticed that Governor Jack Markell from Delaware, in some of the writing about the American election, a lot of which is very boring and very tedious and repetitive, but some of it's good. Governor Jack Markell, who's a Democrat, said, "We all believe in economic opportunity for everyone. The difference between myself and Bernie Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren is that they think it's not happening because the system is rigged, and I think it's not happening because the system is changing." And that's a very different take, isn't it? There's one that's almost a conspiracy theory, and the other that says, look, honestly, we're struggling with the pace of change. I know which one I'd prefer to opt for.
Well, I think in a way, both could be right. I mean, the system is changing. I mean, the electronic revolution is something I think we're just beginning to grasp. The revolution in genetics is something we're just beginning to grasp. The world is going to be a very different place as a result of some of these changes. But I do think also that it seems increasingly clear that, you know, people in banks and investment companies use or have been using their positions, not all, but have been using their positions to make a great deal of money. Big companies have been avoiding taxes by moving money around the world, avoiding tax regimes. And so I think it may be both. I mean, I think conspiracy is too strong a word, but I think people and companies have, a lot of people have been dodging paying up what they probably should be paying up because they're able to move funds around the world so easily. But I think also there is a sense that the world is changing very quickly and we can't control change. But I think we can at least try and mitigate its impact on people. And a lot of people lose with globalization. A lot of people lose with change. And so far, we're not doing a good job at helping those people.
So what sort of leaders do you think, realistically speaking, we need to have? I mean, you've looked at the vacuum of good leadership. Is it compromise and consensus, or is it the absolute risk taker, or is there a premium on decisiveness? Is that what you think about when you reflect on it, all those you've looked at?
Well, I think it depends what the times demand, and it depends what the situation demands. Sometimes you need people who take risks. You need people who say, look, we're going to go for it because it's the right thing to do. And I think Obama took a risk, for example, with opening relations with Iran. My own view was it was the right thing to do, but he took a considerable risk in doing it. Nixon took a risk in going to China all those years ago. But I think it was a necessary and in the end, a very important risk to have taken. Sometimes I think we need compromise and cooperation. We need to build coalitions. And sometimes you need leaders who have to say, the most difficult thing of all, I think, sometimes is for leaders to say things to people that they don't necessarily want to hear. To say to them, you know, to say to the public, look, it's not going to be easy to fix this. We're going to do our best. I mean, I think Angela Merkel has been quite good at speaking fairly frankly to the German public and not promising too much. So I think it's a combination of things. It's knowing when to take risks. It's knowing when to compromise. It's, of course, trying to balance, all political leaders have to do this, between the needs of your own domestic constituency and the international environment. And they can't go too international because then they'll forget about their own people, and they can't concentrate too much on what's going on at home because they'll forget what's going on in the world around them. And so you want leaders who are capable of doing both, understanding what has to be done at home, but also trying to build some sort of international cooperation, which will in the end, of course, help the people they're responsible for.
And what about the media and the 24-hour news cycle as a new player into this heightened awareness of what's going on? I don't know what the equivalent, well, in fact, of course, as you also pointed out in your book, in the lead up to 2014, we had mass media really for the first time, in a sense. I think I'm right saying that. Do you think that the new communications technology is playing into this heightened awareness?
Well, I think what it can do is play into a heightened awareness of sort of what's going wrong. Because what makes news tends to be what's going wrong and not what's going right. And so when atrocities happen around the world, we know about them at once. And that tends to give the impression that the world is just going to pieces. You know, we hear about horrific attacks in France. We hear about horrific attacks in Germany. We hear about horrific attacks in the United States. And we begin to think that the whole world is like this. And I think that can magnify. And of course, it can also encourage the people who want to do such attacks because they want to get this sort of result. I think what the 24-hour media can also do is really create an unrealistic expectation of what governments can do. Governments can't respond on the spot to some of these crises. Some of them are not going to be solved in 24 hours, in 1 second, in 2 minutes, or whatever. And so I think what perhaps we expect too much because of the new type of media is that everything's going to be settled right away quickly.
Yes, rather than people. So you think that people would mark up someone who says, I'm going to quietly assess this and take my time. You think that that's a reasonable thing for a modern leader to say?
Well, I'd like to hear it sometimes. I don't think I want a modern leader who says, I'm going to decide right now, I've got my finger on the button and I'm going to push the button and let the rockets go off. I'd think I'd prefer someone who's going to say, you know, this is a complicated situation. Let me get the best brains and get, you know, get do a little bit of thinking about it. But it's more difficult now. I think our expectation is that solutions will come quickly.
And just finally, another writer suggested that we were sort of falling back into tribes, our social structures, which I suppose one could say nationalist tribes were one of the sort of real problems leading up to World War One. Do you see any evidence of that really that worries you?
I can see the evidence that people are thinking perhaps in of themselves in terms of their smaller groups, whether those are ethnic groups or religious groups. And I think we've always, through human history, had this oscillation between being part of a larger organization and being part of a smaller one. I mean, we have multiple identities. And so I can be a Canadian, but I can also be someone who lives in Toronto. I can also be a person of a particular age. I can be an academic. And I think at times of crisis or when we feel threats, we tend to look for safe communities where we feel at home. And I think, unfortunately, and I think we're seeing it today, that can lead us to look with suspicion on other communities that aren't just like us. And I think a lot of the hostility to immigrants in Europe, for example, is a reaction to the uncertainty people are feeling and then looking around for someone or something to blame for it.
Margaret McMillan, thank you very much indeed. That was a marvellous sense-making episode, I think, in our lives. So I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for talking to me.
And that's the impressive Margaret McMillan, Warden of St Anthony's College at Oxford, Professor of International History there. Some of her books are The Uses and Abuses of History and The War That Ended Peace, that discussed the lead-up to World War One, and one of the two really acclaimed books that emerged from the staggering range that did in 2014. It was a fabulous book, and she was speaking there from her home in Toronto via Skype.